Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
The Michael Reed Show podcast. Tune in weekdays from 9 on LMFM. To contact us, email now, michael@lmfm.ie.
Monday morning, the 25th of March. Good morning. With much debate and discussion from now till 11 a.m, this is Michael Reed on LMFM. The coronation of Simon Harris as new leader of Fine Gael took place yesterday. On the 9th of April, it's expected he will become the next Taoiseach.
It's the absolute honour of my life to formally be here with you today in Athlone to accept the leadership of this great party.
The new leader of Fine Gael spoke to members yesterday about the enthusiasm he feels on taking up the position following the decision of Leo Varadkar to step down, and he was intent on demonstrating how he intends to reinvigorate his party and focus on its core values.
We stand for streets that are safe and crime that is never allowed to go unchecked. And in a week where I saw the tricolour of this republic draped over the coffin of a Garda killer, I say shame. Let's take our flag back. Take it back. Take our flag back. Take it back.
Well, members of Fine Gael applauding their new leader in Athlone yesterday, Simon Harris, now the leader of Fine Gael, and as mentioned, and as I'm sure you're very much aware at this stage, will assume the office of Taoiseach on the 9th of April. Let's speak to Peter Fitzpatrick, who's an independent TD for Louth and East Meath. A very good morning to you, Peter. Thanks for joining us on the programme. You're an independent TD now, of course, but one time, and not that long ago, you were a Fine Gael TD and a long-time member of the Fine Gael party. What do you make of its new leader?
Michael, it's been a very interesting week, Michael. It's a terror. I feel as though history is repeating itself. I can remember back in 2017 when Enda Kenny passed the baton over to Leo Varadkar. And that evening, that's an evening I'll never forget, because at that stage, Michael, as I said, I was a member of Fine Gael. My office was on the fifth floor in Leinster House. After Leo became Taoiseach, I went back to my room, and directly across my room was Andy Kenny, and he called me in and he asked me to sit down beside him, and he put his hands in his pockets, and he had two phones in his pockets, and he put the two phones in the table directly in front of me, and he says to me, "Peter, an hour ago them two phones were flying, now all of a sudden nothing's happening." So as I said, he is Leo Varadkar now, the former Taoiseach and the former leader of Fine Gael, is going to be a forgotten man. The new kid in the block is going to be Simon Harris. I think there's a lot of expectations on behalf of all the Fine Gael people. I was speaking to them all there last week. They're all looking to get ministers' jobs or junior ministers' jobs. There's a talk of reshuffle. Patrick Donoghue, Simon Coveney, I believe, are not very, very happy. Then we put on a bit of pressure by the new leader. Are they going to stay or not going to stay? Both made a statement yesterday that they're going to stay. So Simon has a lot of work to do in the next couple of days. He has till the 8th of April when the door comes back, and Simon will probably be made Taoiseach. I know you're going to ask me a question, have you made any decision what I'm going to do? I've made no decision whatsoever. And I wasn't surprised that Leo Varadkar resigned there last week, because if you look at it, over the last number, if you go back as far as last May 2022, Joe McHugh was the first person to state a young a young, good politician, stated that he wasn't going to seek re-election. Then all of a sudden you have Brendan Griffiths. Now, last week there, you just did see the Madigan. So you have 11 members of Fine Gael.
And more to come, I think.
Well, I remember a few weeks ago there, I spoke to Leo Ferraco, and I was asking, I said, what's going on with Fine Gael? And he did say to me that there's more to come. I spoke to Simon Howis there last Tuesday in the door there and that there. I don't think he actually knew what was happening. I do believe that he didn't know that Leo was standing down. I'm going to be honest, over the last number of months, I've been asked numerous of times by senior ministers of Fine Gael whether they consider going back to get involved with Fine Gael. I am very, very happy as an independent. I feel as though since the death of Fine Gael, I think I've done a lot more work in my area. I feel as though I can contribute a lot more. I remember making a comment years ago there when I left Fine Gael. The only reason I was in Fine Gael was to push a button. It didn't go down too well with the members of Fine Gael, but it was the truth. But I feel as though over the last number of years, being an independent, being a voice of the people that live in these meetings, I felt as though myself, I've done a lot more to help people in bad situations.
Fine Gael would appear to be in trouble going into the next set of elections, the local and European elections. But as you say, there's real trouble brewing for the new leader, isn't there, with the amount of TDs standing down, 11 at this stage. Can add to that, I think, Leo Varadkar and Charlie Flanagan and Michael Ring, quite possibly. This could lead to a period in opposition for Fine Gael. Is that what you'd envisage?
Well, I know the local elections and the European elections, it's going to be a very, very big day, especially for Fine Gael, because what they'll be doing is they'll be looking for new candidates for the general election. One thing I will say, Michael, I do believe that Micheál Martin and Amy Ryan and Leo Varadkar had a very good relationship. I do believe that the government will last another 12 months. I think Simon realises that he needs to get his feet under the table. He needs to know what's happening. He needs to have a look around to see if there's any potential young people coming around. I was listening to Paul Cunningham last night in the radio station, and I believe that Leo has already asked Kate O'Connell, will she come back into the party? I believe that he's chasing Brendan Griffiths and Paul Cho and other members of that. So he's kind of looking around. But I think the local elections will be very, very, and the European elections will be a big thing for Fine Gael. Also, I was a wee bit disappointed there yesterday when you see our local MEP, Colin Markey, who for the last number of weeks has been doing a lot of canvassing around the area, and all of a sudden making an announcement that he wasn't going to run as an MEP. So basically, he's making way there for Nina Carberry to come in there and Maria Walsh. To me, that was disappointing. And then Simon Coveney came out and said that Colin's going to have a great career going forward. So I think Colin's main stance there was to hold on to the seat as an MEP. So all of a sudden, I don't know what's going on there at the moment. And they seem to be all over the places. Now, this is only my opinion. My opinion is I cannot see Simon Coveney and I cannot see Pascal Dunhill running in the next general election. Simon Howis is putting a lot of pressure on him to come out because I think what Simon's trying to do at the moment is Simon is trying to make vacancies for ministers because there are a lot of young people coming, a lot of ambitious people coming behind him there. You've got Peter Buck, you've got Jennifer Cowan McNeil, you've got Neil Richardson, and these are people who've done a lot of work over the last number of months for Simon. And a very interesting column I seen in local papers the weekend, I saw in the national papers the weekend, was I heard that Phil Hogan's name was mentioned. That Phil Hogan has been tutoring Simon Howis for the last couple of months, maybe seeing the potential of maybe Leo, maybe pulling out and being ready. And also Pascal Dunhill, who was a very, very close friend of Leo. The only people that Leo told last Tuesday was the two other coalition leaders and Simon Coveney. And I think Pascal has been very, very disappointed, especially what he's done and showing these. Back, if you go back in 2017, he was one of the main people, the main forces behind Leo Varadkar becoming Taoiseach. And it's going to be a very interesting couple of weeks there at the moment. It's going to be very hard for Simon Harbour to keep everybody happy. So I'm just saying, if you look at the opinion polls the weekend there, you see Sinn Féin's down 3% and Fine Gael's down 1% and that there. So it's going to be a very, very interesting 2 or 3 months down the road, Michael.
Yeah, I think it will be. And when you talk about that energy in Fine Gael, is that what Simon Harris will be looking for? Is it true to say that Fine Gael is beginning to look tired at this stage, and it needs an input of energy.
Well, I think in fairness to Leo, I think Leo realised that he was losing the battle there. As you look around, you're seeing a lot of senior people falling out. As I said, the local election, it's going to be a very, very important time for Fine Gael at the moment, is because you could have got maybe 15 of the TDs not going again. A lot of these TDs have been there for a long time, and they'd have a certain amount of votes because that's the way people go. Maybe someone new coming in mightn't have the same skills and the same energy that the people leaving. It's going to be a very, very interesting time. And if you look at County Louth, for example, like, you have Mel Monster and Fergus, they're not going again. And I think Fergus have been interviewed there last
and therein lies the role for Colin Markey, doesn't it? Fine Gael are deciding to run a jockey and a Rose of Tralee contestant, Maria Walsh, who's a sitting MEP, in the European elections in this constituency. I think the expectation then will be that Colin Markey and John McGann, a senator, will stand as election candidates in Louth, and that will be a big ask for them to bring two home, let alone one, will it?
Michael, as I said, you think Amanda Monster and Fergus, there's not going, so there's two openings straight away there at the moment. I've been lucky enough over the last 13 years to be elected three times, and I'll tell you, I have nothing but admiration for people who put their name forward, but politics has changed over the last 13 years there at the moment, the social media, the whole thing has changed completely, Michael, and there's talk there, are we getting the right people into politics there at the moment? But Michael, there's no God-given right. There's no one guaranteed a seat. Colin Markey will have to come in like everybody else at the moment. They have got through a convention there at the moment. And I'm sure that there's a lot more people in the area, Fine Gael, maybe the local councils and that there in the Louth and Meath area. Maybe they might feel as though they have an opportunity there. And you have to go in front of the convention and you have to get the members to vote for you. It's not just as simple as that there. Yeah. But I was really, really surprised with Colin Markey the weekend there. Did Simon Harris come in and make his mark and say, listen, this is going to happen, A, B and C. There's talk now that Fine Gael are going to lose up as far as maybe two MEPs, and maybe they want to come in now and maybe get someone like Nina Carberry, who they think will be electable.
When we do get to the general election, I take it Peter Fitzpatrick will be standing as an independent.
Well, at the moment, Michael, I am, because I've been working very hard. I've got a very good constituency office. I've got a very good staff here at the moment. And as I said to you, Michael, since I became an independent, I feel as though I've contributed a lot more to my local area and that there. And as I said to you, the general election, I don't care when the general election comes, because at the moment, Michael, I'm ready for a general election. But I can't see a general election. If I put myself in Simon Harris' shoes at the moment, I'd be trying to get the whole thing, reorganise. As you say, get the energy in there at the moment, get my people in the right places there at the moment, hopefully have a good maybe local election, European election there at the moment. But there's no Simon Harris, because people say that Fine Gael is in the dirt and everything else. Maybe it's the right time to take over Fine Gael that he feels it all. But to be honest, he's a very ambitious, he's a good communicator. He's not afraid to step on people's toes there at the moment. So listen, he's an opportunity, as I said here, what goes around comes around. And as I said here, I remember the baton being passed over to Leo Varadkar. All of a sudden Leo's passing the baton over to Simon Harris. So, Michael, it's going to be very, very interesting times over the next number of months.
You wouldn't be tempted yourself, though, to stand for Fine Gael again.
Michael, I think one of the best things I ever done, Michael, was go independent. I had my issues with Fine Gael. I have a very clear conscience now at the moment, and I will be honest, Michael, I worked very, very hard. I've given people around me at the moment. I enjoy politics at the moment, because I think when you're honest with yourself and you're honest with people and everything else, then I feel as though I can contribute a lot more being an independent. As I said, it was a fantastic honour for myself and my wife and my family to get elected as an independent in Louth, the first independent in Louth for nearly 100 years, and it was great. And I will be honest, I've never, ever worked as hard. And there's a lot of work needs to be done over the next number of years, and I hope to be able to help the people of Louth and Eastmead.
What discussions have you had with Independent Ireland? This is a new political party that was formed by the independent TDs Michael Collins and Richard O'Donoghue, and recently Michael Fitzmaurice, a third TD, joined the party. I'm sure that they've approached you. Can you tell us about what discussions have taken place?
Michael, I was a poacher to Michael, and I told him from day one, I have no interest in talking to him. I'm an independent TD. I'm part of a rural group at the moment. We've got a very good relationship ourselves with at the moment, the group I'm involved there at the moment. I just hope that that group can continue on there. I think we contributed a lot over the last 4 years, and I have no intentions of leaving that group.
You supported Fine Gael throughout, Leo Varadkar's reign. Will you continue to support Fine Gael as an independent TD with Simon Harris as leader?
If you look at my record in it all, I haven't supported the government in a lot of occasions, especially with the eviction ban there. I was really disappointed with the eviction ban. But you go back as far as the 20th of February in 2019, when they were looking for confidence in the Minister for Health, and the Minister for Health at the time was Simon Harris. And one of a few that didn't support Simon Harris. Sinn Féin had a motion up, and the motion was a no vote confidence in Simon Harris, the Minister for Health, and I supported Sinn Féin in that vote, and no vote of confidence in the Minister. I'm very open, I'm very transparent, I go vote for vote. I remember there last week I was talking to one of the ministers there, and he was saying, I see you don't really vote as much with the government as you used to. But I said, listen, I said, I haven't changed. I just think that if I feel as though that the government's doing something wrong, I won't support them. If they're doing something right, I will support them. And I have no intention of changing that way, Michael.
And if you had no confidence in Simon Harris as the Minister for Health, would you have confidence in him as Taoiseach?
Well, like I said, the next 2 weeks, it'd be very important to see what his mandate is. I will be honest with you, I have a very, very good relationship with Micheál Martin and Fianna Fáil. For the last 4 years, I haven't been dealing directly with the Fine Gael. I've been dealing with Micheál Martin. And Edna been looking for the last 4 years. I've been looked after. So I will be sitting down. I'm sure I'll be getting a phone call from Simon Harris over the next couple of days to see what I'm going to do. But I think it's very important that I have a look and see what their intentions are going forward. If I agree with what's going to happen over the next 12 months, I will give my support to Simon Harris. If I don't agree with what's going to happen over the next 12 months, I will not be voting for Simon Harris.
Okay, we'll leave it there for the moment. Thank you, as always, for joining us on the programme today. That is Independent TD for Louth and East Meath, Peter Fitzpatrick. Now, if you want to comment on the programme today, our telephone number is, as always, 0419832000. You can send us a message by texting it or WhatsApping it to 086 1800 658. That's 086 1800 658 if you want to comment on the programme today. And you can also email michael@lmfm.ie.
086 1800 658. The Michael Reid Show, brought to you by Airgrid, managing and planning the national grid so that everyone has electricity when and where they need it.
Quite a number of messages into us already this morning. Thanks if you're one of the people who has taken the time to text us. Sean says, in a speech to the fawning party pals, Simon Harris promised the sun, the moon and the stars. What a mad rant. What on earth was he doing for the last 13 years, asks Sean. Text then from John, who says, Colm Markey should be the obvious choice to replace Fergus O'Dowd in Louth. Well, it looks like that will be the case because he's not going to be on the Fine Gael ticket when we vote in the European elections. Ellen says, listening to Ivana Bakic of the Labour Party, it made me laugh, on about health, housing and homelessness. Wasn't it Labour that took medical cards of sick children and cut women's pensions? Labour will never be trusted again by the working people, Ellen says. Thanks as well for your message this morning. Helen McCardle in touch with us, and she says, Peter, all the way, very honest man. He gets my number one. That's Peter Fitzpatrick, who we were speaking to a moment ago. Betty Daly in touch too, saying, good morning, Michael. With all of the shuffling that's going on in the government at the moment, it's like the Bard song. I stepped out and I stepped in again, and with a beauty queen and a jockey baying for a position, it's like Sesame Street, says Betty Daly. Another text then that comes to us from Joseph says, great to see a young person at the top of Irish politics. Simon's energy and enthusiasm are refreshing. His determination is obvious for everyone to see, and as Taoiseach, I hope he takes on the big issues head on and succeeds where Leo Varadkar failed, especially on housing and immigration. We'd Sandra in touch, and she says, well done to Simon Harris on becoming leader of Fine Gael, and spreading the positive Fine Gael message. It is so refreshing after listening to all of the doom and gloom that we hear from opposition about our great little country. Thanks for that. Sandra, Susan in touch too, saying Simon Harris is one of the people who gets up early in the morning and he understands the value of work. I hope at last that work will be rewarded and that our new Taoiseach will have little truck for spongers, the same old wasters who want to get everything but want to do nothing. Thank you indeed for your very candid message for that matter. Susan, somebody else in touch saying, Michael, maybe it's time for a successful Irish dancer, plumber, pastry chef, etc. In the Dáil. No political knowledge required. That appears to be the requisite. Money is great and expenses are wonderful. God, it's a cynical lot who are listening to us this morning, but it's great to have you with us and great to have you sharing your thoughts with us. 0419832000 is our telephone number. You can text, as I said a moment ago, on 086 1800 658, and you can email michael@lmfm.ie.
There needs to be a general election now. Several parties have called for it in the House today, and I strongly suspect that there are many, many people out there in the society who will say, yes, it's time for that now. The new Taoiseach should be chosen. The people should have the decisive say in who the next Taoiseach is, not the Fine Gael parliamentary party. This has been a good Taoiseach. He's been a good Taoiseach for the wealthy. He's been a good Taoiseach for the upper echelons of the middle class, but not for working people and not for the poor. And I think the legacy will be a housing crisis which went from bad to worse, and a health crisis which is worsening as well. We need a change of government, a government that will act in the interests of working people and the poor at the expense of the wealthy who've benefited so massively under this government. And we need a debate about the need for a general election in this House this week.
That's People Before Profit, TD McBarry speaking last week in the Dáil, and like many members of the opposition calling for a general election, it seems as though we're not going to be asked to vote in a general election, and that Simon Harris, who has now become the leader of Fine Gael, will go on in a couple of weeks from now to become Ireland's next Taoiseach.
Call Michael now, 041 983 2000.
The Michael Reid Show, brought to you by Airgrid, managing and planning the national grid so that everyone has electricity when and where they need it. Michael@lmfm.ie. The Michael Reid Show with Airgrid, managing and developing the national electricity grid so that it's fit for our current needs and ready for our future ones.
The United Nations Security Council met on Friday. The focus was on Gaza.
The United States, Egypt and Qatar are working around the clock in the region to secure an immediate and sustained ceasefire as part of a deal that leads to the release of all hostages being held by Hamas and other groups that will help us address the dire humanitarian crisis in Gaza.
Now, this is the American ambassador to the United Nations, Linda Thomas-Greenfield. America, over the course of the last number of months, has vetoed a number of resolutions that have called for a ceasefire in Gaza. On Friday, it tabled its own motion, which would have looked for a pause in the fighting and for the opportunity to allow humanitarian aid to get into the people who are under siege. The ambassador has been explaining what the resolution was about.
We believe we're close. We're not there yet, unfortunately. And this moment is one where the Security Council has a critical role to play. By adopting the resolution before us, we can put pressure on Hamas to accept the deal on the table. Colleagues, you don't need me to tell you that every day without a deal, meaning every day without a ceasefire, leads to more needless suffering. For more than 100 hostages, including a one-year-old child being held in captivity by Hamas and other groups, for innocent Palestinians in Gaza who have been displaced, who are starving, who desperately need peace. For Israelis who've continued to face missile attacks from Hamas, a terrorist group that set this conflict into motion on October 7th. Every day without a deal means more needless suffering. This resolution will move us closer to securing that deal and help us alleviate that suffering. And I urge all council members to vote yes, to vote for a resolution that at long last condemns Hamas for its horrific terrorist attacks and sexual violence, that makes clear that all civilians, Palestinians and Israelis, should be able to live without fear of violence, that demands the protection of civilians in Gaza, and stresses that a major ground offensive in Rafah poses a grave threat to civilians, even as we still work toward eliminating Hamas from all parts of Gaza, that calls on Israel to eliminate all barriers and restrictions to humanitarian aid, especially as the threat of famine looms large in northern Gaza, that condemns calls to resettle Gaza and makes clear that the Palestinian Authority should have ultimate authority over Gaza, and that reiterates this council's support for a two-state solution.
That's Linda Thomas-Greenfield, the United States Ambassador to the United Nations. Let's speak to Larry Donnelly, law lecturer at the University of Galway and a political columnist with the journal.ie. Good morning to you, Larry. Thanks indeed for joining us on the programme this morning. Fine words there from the ambassador and laudable aspirations in what we heard from the ambassador. But of course, the draft resolution was voted against by Russia and China. It's not the first time that a resolution has been vetoed. But there's also been strong criticism of the American resolution from the Arab states. And they were concerned that this resolution urged the United Nations to determine the imperative for an immediate and sustained ceasefire, but it did not explicitly call on the Israelis to pause its military offensive. What is the American position, or is it blurred in your mind?
I think it's clearly blurred. You know, it you know, and I do think this is a shame, though, Michael, in the sense that this didn't get over the line. You know, it does represent, in my view, a fundamental shift in American foreign policy. Something like this was, you know, really unthinkable until recent days. And I think it was a step in the right direction. Of course, it wasn't as strong as I think most people would have liked, myself included, but it was a step in a better place. But you know, a lot of this comes down to domestic political realities and the relationship between the United States and Israel, and of course, in an election year, the power of the Israeli lobby. So this was about as good as you were going to see come from the United States. It wasn't good enough for a lot of people, and I get that. But it seems to me there's a little bit of a letting the perfect be the enemy of the good here. And of course, Russia and China act for their own independent, separate reasons, not a lot of which have to do with human rights, I would suggest to you. But, you know, we are where we are, and I think it's a shame.
Yeah, well, I think that there was concern, as I say, that it didn't call for an immediate ceasefire. Sometimes the formula of words in these motions or resolutions can be very important in how they're determined and interpreted. But there was also concern about the resolution that it only mentioned Israel once. And there seemed to be a feeling amongst the Arabic states that this resolution would have afforded guilt on both sides.
Yeah, I think that's true, and I understand where that sentiment comes from. But this, you know, again, this is the of all the issues that there are, all the geopolitical issues that there are right now, the one that separates, I think, the United States from the rest of the world, certainly the United States and Ireland, is attitudes towards Israel. And you know that is, you know, the fundamental bottom line here is that you know, the American, you know, and there's been much made of young Americans moving against Israel, the power of the Arab American community in states like Michigan, et cetera. But the majority of Americans are still reflexively pro-Israel. And Joe Biden and his administration understand that. They also want to stave off the civil war that it could precipitate if they move too hard against the Israeli state because, again, of the power of the Israeli lobby in the U.S. So that's why I say this was about as far as you're going to see the United States go.
Could it,
I'd be surprised if they go any further than this.
Could it not have gone further on getting aid into the region? We're hearing from UNRWA today that Israel is blocking aid getting into northern Gaza, but the United Nations resolution didn't, as some would have hoped for, call for a return of funding UNRWA.
Yeah, I mean, UNRWA in the United States, and you know, any if you follow any political leaders in the U.S., UNRWA has become an enemy. Almost in the United States. An awful lot of people in the United States believe that UNRWA is a wholly owned subsidiary of Hamas. Now, whether they're right or wrong, I don't know, but that is the perception in the United States. So, you know, again, it's a situation where people in the U.S. and the political system and the powers that be in the United States view this dramatically differently. And I think that that's a horrific shame. We all know what we're seeing day in and day out, the horrific images in Gaza, but it just doesn't seem to penetrate a lot of the mindset in the United States on this matter. So it's, you know, look, this was about as good as it was going to come from the United States, and, you know, we've seen it fall. So how much difference it makes, I'm not so sure, but I do think it's a shame.
All right, well, there'll be another resolution put forward by the Arab states, which will be voted on today, as I understand it. But they're critical of how the United States didn't talk about what will happen in Gaza after the war and who should govern Gaza, and critical too that there was no condemnation in the United States resolution about how Israel is breaching international humanitarian law.
Yes, yeah, all of which are points well made, but it's just a circle that I'm afraid is not going to be squared. And this comes down to, as I've said, a domestic political reality in the United States and the Biden reelection campaign. The reality, Michael, and this is a sad fact, is that the America-Israel Public Affairs Committee, which is a hugely powerful lobby in the United States, they care about one thing and one thing only. They care about the security and safety of the Israeli state. They do not care a whit about the Palestinians or the Palestinian people. They believe at their heart, they believe that whatever Israel does here to secure its security, no matter how horrific we might all find it, they believe that it is all entirely legitimate. And the political force that they wield in the U.S. cannot be underestimated. And even though they are left-leaning, typically, if they perceive the Biden administration to move against the Israeli state, they would have no problem whatsoever intervening, not just on behalf of Donald Trump, but on behalf of Republican candidates up and down the ballot. And that is the sad political reality that underpins all of this.
Let's hear what the Palestinians had to say about the American resolution. We've a brief clip, Larry, of the Palestinian ambassador to the United Nations, Riyad Mansour.
We are the Council of Arab Ambassadors at the UN, and we want to say from the beginning that the ambassador of Algeria, who spoke inside the Security Council, reflects unanimously the unified Arab position vis-a-vis the draft resolution, which was not adopted in the Security Council for the obvious reasons, including it is one-sided and it did not mention Israel except maybe one time. And we reject framing what is happening as a terrorism issue. It is a genocide against the entire population of the Palestinian people in the Gaza Strip.
Riyad Mansour talking about a genocide against Palestinian people. I'm sure you've heard the chants on the streets of this country, Larry, referring to the American president as Genocide Joe. Do you believe that's fair?
It's a very hard question because I'm deeply, deeply troubled, like we all are, Michael, I think, by the images we see. I'm not a genocide scholar, but it is hard to look at what's happening every day and to see it as anything other than a genocide. I have a lot of respect for President Biden, but I think he's wrong on this. I wish the United States were in a different position, but I'd say two things. First off, he is between a political rock and a very hard place. On this one, and whichever way he moves, it is fraught with peril. And the second thing I would say is that if people in Ireland and elsewhere are opposed to Joe Biden's policy, if they call him Genocide Joe, et cetera, and I get their anger, I get their frustration, wait till they see what the alternative would be. A President Trump goaded by the evangelical Christian community in the United States and other elements who would be relentlessly pro-Israel and willing to support anything that Israel does, including the ongoing slaughter of innocent men, women, and children in Gaza. So that's where we're at. It doesn't make me happy to say any of this, but that's where we're at.
Okay, Larry, thank you for saying it and for joining us on the program today. Larry Donnelly, law lecturer at the University of Galway and a political columnist with thejournal.ie.
086-1800-658. The Michael Reid Show, brought to you by Airgrid, managing and planning the national grid so that everyone has electricity when and where they need it.
Call Michael now, 041-983-2000.
The Michael Reid Show, brought to you by Airgrid, managing and planning the national grid so that everyone has electricity when and where they need it.
Well, still people are getting in touch, and understandably so, about the political landscape because of the upheaval in Fine Gael. And Frank in touch with us about the Labour Party, saying that he's never going to trust the Labour Party again, and that he won't be voting for the local candidate. Another text comes to us from somebody who says, "Good morning, Michael. I haven't heard anybody in all of the commentary over the weekend talk about the cost of this new Taoiseach. When this unwanted coalition was shoved together, they decided to have a rotating Taoiseach, thereby at a cost to the taxpayer of two Taoiseach's pensions. And now we have another Taoiseach coming in who will be in his position for a maximum of 1 year, and we get landed with paying for another Taoiseach's pension. None of the electorate were given any choice. If I have to pay for another Taoiseach's pension, then I want it to be a new Taoiseach. It's time for a general election," according to our caller. Thank you very much indeed. On that subject, somebody in touch with us saying, would it not be in the interest of everybody if we did a poll? Would LMFM not do a poll and ask, would the public like to see a general election? Well, thanks very much for that. Unfortunately, when you do those kind of things on the radio, it's very hard to know if all of the people who made contact were reflective of the general public. Sometimes you get all of the people who are for an election or all of the people who are against an election who are very animated by the thing and get in touch. So it's not reflective of the people who don't get in touch. But we are asking that question on an ongoing basis. We're not claiming to have the de facto response in terms of public opinion, but if you would like to tell us whether you'd like to see a general election or not, and why not, more to the point, let us know. Our phone number is 0419832000. That's 0419832000. Text or WhatsApp 086-1800-658, 086-1800-658. If you want to comment by sending us a text or a WhatsApp or email michael@lmfm.ie. Now, the Dáil is in recess this week, but when it returns, Simon Harris will undoubtedly become the next Taoiseach of this country. It comes at a time, of course, when there's not just a lot of problems in this country, but a lot of problems in the world, where war is commonplace and the movement of people is altogether too familiar to all of us. But it is the war in Gaza that we've been discussing this morning, and indeed that United Nations draft resolution that was put by the United States. Now, a lot of people were interpreting it to mean that the United States had done a U-turn on its policy up to now, vetoing similar resolutions and now calling for a ceasefire. But it didn't actually call for a ceasefire. It called on the United Nations to determine what should happen. And there was criticism from the Arabic countries, as we heard the Palestinian ambassadors say. That was reflected in a speech that was given to a meeting of the United Nations Security Council on Friday by the Algerian ambassador.
It is beyond any doubt that Resolution 2712 and 2720 have fallen short due to the absence of a clear demand for a ceasefire. Those who believe that the Israeli occupying power will choose to uphold its international legal obligation are mistaken. They must abandon this fiction.
This is Amar Benjama, the Algerian ambassador to the United Nations, outlining why he and his colleagues in the Arabic states believe the American resolution fell short.
Throughout this process, we emphasized relentlessly the urgency of an immediate ceasefire to prevent further loss of life. We echoed the demand of millions of people and humanitarian actors for an immediate cessation of hostilities. Regrettable.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
The draft resolution falls short of our expectations. It fails to adequately address these main issues.
Algeria, Palestine, and the other Arabic states, saying that the American resolution fell short of what it had hoped for, and they'll be tabling their own resolution, which will be voted on today. And it wasn't just the Arabic states that were unhappy. Israel were not happy with the American resolution either.
By making one-sided demands of Israel without making any demands of the Palestinians to end their culture of hate and incitement, a long-term solution will never be possible. Demand that the Palestinian Authority combat terror. Demand that they end incitement. Demand that they stop paying salaries to terrorists. Demand that they de-radicalize the people. The educational transformation that the German people underwent after the Third Reich was toppled is what the Palestinians need to receive so that they finally support coexistence. Coexistence with Jews. Coexistence with Israel. That's how we educate our kids. Mr. President, the war may be in Gaza, but this war extends much, much further than our battle against Hamas. The true puppet master directing Hamas, Hezbollah, the Houthis, all of them to attack us and their militias is, as you all well know, is Iran. Iran is the architect of instability and its ambitions of world domination must be stopped. The Ayatollah regime is determined to wipe Israel off the map, and they are not ashamed to say it publicly. Tomorrow, dear colleagues, the Jewish people will celebrate the holiday of Purim. And this holiday is a very important message to the murderous Ayatollah regime and the rest of the world. 1,500 years ago, in Persia, which is modern-day Iran, the king signed a disastrous decree, a resolution calling to annihilate all the Jews in his empire. Following this catastrophic decision, the Jewish people banded together and through conviction and faith, they succeeded in reversing this resolution, gaining the right of self-defense. As a result, the Jewish people defeated all those who set out to murder them, and the man behind this evil plot was executed. This is the story of Purim, our holiday. And the holiday's slogan is V'nahafochu, and the opposite happened. Those who plotted against the Jewish people had their own schemes turned against them. This is the essence of Jewish history. The very same faith and conviction that the Jews of Persia displayed has been carried with us to this day. This is why we have survived and thrived, despite all of the decrees and racist resolutions against us throughout history. Many have tried to destroy us, but all have failed, because we will never surrender and we will always fight for our existence. Members of this council called for a ceasefire in honor of the Muslim holiday of Ramadan. We respect Ramadan, but Hamas's massacre was carried out on the Jewish holiday of Simchat Torah, the holiday where we mark the completion of the reading of the Old Testament, the Torah. So today, in order of Purim, the request of the Jewish people is that this council takes real and active measures to release all of our hostages. And if we are successful, if the hostages return home and Hamas is dismantled, then, just as it says in the Megillah, the text that we read on Purim, LaYehudim hayta ora v'simcha v'sason v'ikar. The Jewish people had light and joy, gladness, happiness, and honor for us and all humanity.
Now, that's the Israeli ambassador to the United Nations, Gilad Erdan, explaining why Israel wasn't happy with the American resolution. And we wish our Jewish listeners a happy Purim today. Let's go back to the Arabic states and the Algerian ambassador and why they're not content or were not content or satisfied with the American resolution.
And the immense suffering enduring by the Palestinian people. Over 5 months, the conflict in Gaza has resulted in the tragic loss of life of more than 32,000 Palestinian lives. 32,000 Palestinian lives. More than 74 injuries. 74,000 injuries. With 12,000 suffering permanent disabilities. These are not mere statistics. They represent lives. They represent dreams. They represent hopes who have been destroyed. Alarmingly, the text avoids mentioning the responsibility of the Israeli occupying power. These individuals were not lost due to act of self-harm. They were killed. Their perpetrators must be held accountable. For us, in the Arab world, in the Islamic nation, in the whole world, Palestinians' lives undeniably matter.
The Algerian ambassador to the United Nations, Amar Benjama. Now, if you'd like to comment on the program today, let me remind you, our number is 0419832000 if you want to ring, text or WhatsApp 086-1800-658. Email michael at lmfm.ie.
086-1800-658. The Michael Reid Show, brought to you by Airgrid, managing and planning the national grid so that everyone has electricity when and where they need it.
Call Michael now, 041-983-2000.
The Michael Reid Show, brought to you by Airgrid, managing and planning the national grid so that everyone has electricity when and where they need it.
Now, Jimmy Carroll has come into the studio to talk to us this morning about his son, Bobby. Good morning to you, Jimmy.
Good morning, Michael.
It's not the first time that we've spoken to you about Bobby, and maybe that's where we should start our conversation this morning. We've a lot to talk about, and a lot to talk about in terms of the care that has been afforded to Bobby over a long period of time. But people may remember you talking on this programme back in 2009, wasn't it?
Michael, 17 years ago. I rang your local radio station out of desperation from Drogheda Hospital. And it's almost 17 years to the day, Michael.
Is it?
I'm here again in desperation, looking to get service, the health services, look after my son. My son needs life-changing surgery, and it's been denied to him. I can't even get a phone call. I can't get an answer from the hospital. And now, 17 years later, this was all to finish the life-changing surgery that he had. By the age of 10, finished the primary school. And now, as I say, we're waiting 7 years later. And the operation that he had last May went completely wrong. And now I've been told, 17 years ago, I had to take my son out of a hospital in Drogheda and bring him, take him off the machines and bring him because there wasn't a bed available. 5 days we were in Drogheda waiting for a bed on the hour. And that bed wasn't there. So I made the decision. I rang your station Wednesday night. In desperation, Bobby was screaming, crying, the nurse was trying to feed him. And what happened after that was, the following day, I made a decision that I told the doctors, if they can't get me a bed, I'm going to take him off machines, I'll drive him to Dublin myself. And one doctor told me, said, it was my son, Jimmy, that's what I'd be doing. And I done that. And we went there and missed huge publicity. And the following day, there was emergency surgery performed on my son. He had a black tube, feeding tube. That had to be unblocked. Emergency surgery. Had to hand my son over so I could send for him. And then we went with Professor Quinn, and he explained to us what was wrong with Bobby. Bobby was one of two kids in Europe that had what he had. He had no connection from his bladder to the lower part of his body, and they needed to perform pioneering surgery to make that tube.
Really rare if there were just two cases.
Rare. He was one of two kids in Europe.
Remind us, how old was Bobby then?
Bobby now is 17, just turned February 1st.
But back then he was 4 weeks old, was he?
6 weeks old.
6 weeks old. An infant, a newborn, and had been screaming for days in the Lourdes Hospital when you took that very serious decision to take him out of the hospital.
Just like today, Michael. We brought Bobby down. Jenny, my partner, took him to the doctor one day. The doctor, I knew it was urine coming out of his back passage. Screaming in pain. We couldn't feed him. Brought him to the doctor. The doctor told her, that particular doctor told her that it was just something, an infection or whatever, that urine doesn't come out of a back passage. Mm. It got really bad that night, that, over the weekend, and I rang my employer and I told him that I was going to take him to the hospital. I went over to the same local RD medical centre, Dr. Fenton, Lord be good to him. He gave me a note. I went down to Drogheda. Drogheda A&E was full. I told him, they said to me no, they gave me a little bottle. I was placed down at the end of a cubicle. Bobby sitting, he destroyed me. Ran up to A&E with him and I said, I want somebody to see my son. And what really happened there was, in the 5 days that we were there, although there was over 1,050 births in Drogheda Hospital, there wasn't a paediatrician doctor there. We had a visiting paediatrician. She came in on the Wednesday, Pendleville. Both she and me, I took him down. She done x-rays on him. She said she'd get me to Crumlin. Straight away, she rang. She came back up and said, Jimmy, look, there's no beds. And as I say, I rang you. I looked out. They're building a car park for 1,000 cars. And I'd like to add that after you spoke to me, Jerry Ryan, you rang me and asked me, Jerry Ryan, what to speak to me? And Lord be good to Jerry Ryan. This is relevant to today. And when I told him, he said, Jimmy, it's unbelievable. You know, I said, we're building a car park for 1,000 cars at a time in Drogheda, that car. And they haven't a bed. And he said, Jimmy, we're in a country that's booming. You think we're talking about a third world country today, Michael? And that's what his words. He said, we think we're living in a third world country that we can't have a bed for a bed. I said, today, we've over 240,000 children waiting for procedures. We've more children than in any third world country waiting for operations. We have. And that's a shame. And it's shameful on this government. And I see what's going on at the moment, you know, with Simon Harris and this, that, and the other. It boils my blood. He got a round of applause yesterday from his colleagues. And he's talking about burning an Irish flag. This is a man that failed the health, that's failing in further education. Even our now, our current Minister for Health, he turned around 3 years ago and asked for a vote of no confidence in that minister. And now he's the Minister for Health. Maybe that was his poison chalice he got for being so outspoken against them. But there he's running it now. And as I say to you, you know, you've seen the newspaper clippings. Bobby, he's there, he's with scoliosis children. They're friends of mine now. Those children are walking around today in daily pain.
Should I explain that I have seen the pictures and the newspaper clippings because you've kept a scrapbook which records the last 17 years and the struggle that you've had since Bobby was born. And when he was born, as you say, there was this huge complication that led you to going into the Lourdes Hospital, taking him out of the hospital off your own bat and driving to Crumlin, where he did get treatment. You were told then, though, that you were in for the long haul. This wasn't going to be something that would be... It would be 10 before Bobby would be right, before he'd stop needing treatment. He's now 17. So, fast forward, you've had a lifetime.
I'll explain that to you, Michael. Yeah. As you say, we were sat down by this Professor Quinn, a brilliant surgeon. He's retired. And we were told that by 10 they were going to construct a new tube. And over that period of time, during those operations, Bobby's had multiple surgeries. He's had an awful lot to live with. You've two letters from his schools in that I showed you. I'll explain them to you.
Yeah.
But getting back to what happened, the surgeries, because of cancellations, because of closures over those years, hypocrisy really in the health service. We finally got Bobby last year on his birthday. We were informed that this completion operation was going to be done in May. And as I say, the doctor retired. They were waiting 5 months for a replacement for that doctor. 5 months to get a new consultant in. And we finally met him. He set us down and he explained to us that because it was the surgery that it was pioneering and because there was so much detail to it, he'd have to sit around. He examined Bobby and he gave us a date. And we got that date in February. And the completion surgery was to be done on the 23rd of May. That was to be a three-hour operation. Myself and Bob, Jennifer. We went for a walk, and after 20 minutes we were called back to the hospital. And he brought us into a room and he explained that the procedure has gone wrong. There's a major stumbling block. That lower part of his body that I'm talking about, it's all blocked. And essentially what they've been doing for the last 17 years, the road, it's like building a road for 17 years and it doesn't meet up with the road, that it's crazy.
Mm. Explained to us, Michael. The tube is the
road. Yeah, the urethra tube.
Yeah.
It's what every child has from the bladder to that lower part of the body.
But they're rebuilding that, and that's why you're calling the road, and it doesn't meet up,
That's it. And he explained to us, Michael, and this is hard for me to say because I couldn't say it to Bobby. He explained that he's going to need surgery. That letter isn't there, you've read it. He's going to need surgery. And the surgery involves taking the lining from the inside his mouth, his skin, and skin grafting it onto the lower part of his body and remove all that. Surgery that didn't need that had to be done. And he explained to us, I asked him then, as I asked over the years, can the surgery be done in America or England? Because I know there's funding for it there for cases like that. And he explained to me, and then after that surgery, he explained to me about the seizure that's ahead, using the word he needed more surgery. And the criteria for that is I have to see the specialist in Cork, a woman called Redmond. But he explained that she was on maternity leave and that he'd be meeting with her soon. And he would bring me back within 2 months. That was in May. I got no phone call after 2 months, so I rang Crumlin Hospital again. Patricia, who's been Bobby's secretary, Professor Quinn, and she said to me, Jimmy, she'd get in touch with him. I heard no word. I rang in July, and I got no word. And I rang again in September, and she told me that he was going to be meeting with that surgeon, and he was probably going to discuss Bobby's case then. Again, I heard no word. And again, in November, I rang up. And the last thing she said to me, after being with her for 17 years, was, Jimmy, all I can do is leave a note for him. A note wasn't good enough for me, Michael. Not after 17 years. So I took it upon myself now to get a legal firm. I looked up medical. And I looked up solicitors McGuigan and Calvin, the medical solicitors. And I asked them to represent Bobby. And they sent off requests for Bobby's medical files because I want an independent review of Bobby's case. Someone outside the system to find out what the truth is. And only then did I get a response when they wrote down and requested. And the letter I got back, and you see it there in front of you, what wasn't said to me at that meeting after Bobby's operation, that Bobby's going to require multiple surgeries ahead of him.
What's happened over the last 17 years? How many surgeries has Bobby already had?
Bobby's had 10 operations.
10 operations.
And in them 10 operations, the last operation, Michael, last May, that operation where that cancer, that had to be stopped because of the complications, I had to go back into Bobby, and he was coming out of the... And I had to explain to him that the surgery didn't go well. And his words, he broke down and he was just, really? He said, Daddy, I thought this was going to be the end of it. I thought it was going to be all over. Michael, I haven't had the courage since last May to tell my son what's ahead of him. But because I made my mind up to come in here and talk to you this morning and to openly talk about it, which I shouldn't have to do, I had to sit down last Wednesday night and explain to Bobby what's ahead of him. The surgery and the detail of that surgery. It had been my idea that when I go to Cork and when I get this appointment from Cork, I'll explain it to him the night beforehand to prepare him. But now, as I say, because I'm coming here to you, I've had to explain the situation. And one thing that did surprise me, Michael, is that when I said it to him, and I said, Bobby, it'll become public and it'll probably go further. And I said, people are going to know about your problem. And I said, Daddy, most of the school know already. And you'll see from the two letters, I have a letter from his primary school and I have a letter from his secondary school. Bobby had a a lot of accidents in the school where we'd have to go and collect them and bring them home. Mm. If it, embarrassing, but for his mind, and his state of mind, excuse me, it's been tough for him.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Very, very tough. Mm.
And that's why he needs surgery. That's why he needed surgery from birth. He showers four times a day.
Showers, gets up in the morning, shower, goes home to school, shower. He goes training most days. I remember first when he was going football, I said, son, why are you taking a shower? He said, Daddy, I need to be clean. I'd have a shower and he comes home. Bobby has to have a change of bed every so often. Clothes worse. And this was all to finish before he was 10, Michael.
Mm.
And as I say, the letter, he's multiple surgeries ahead. Yeah. He's a young man coming into adulthood.
How has school life been for him? Having been taken out? And
I want to thank Ardie. There's a few people I'd like to thank. I want to thank Ardie, the primary school, Master McGee, and all the help he gave us then. I want to thank Mr. Smith from the secondary school now. I explained the situation. Bobby has private use of the teachers' toilets because Michael, even at home, when Bobby goes to the toilet, it takes him 20 minutes. And those accidents that he had were when he was in school and he'd be waiting to get into the toilets and he would side himself. And other people, and one in particular, Bobby, if you see him now, I'm so proud of him. We are. And we have a great support. And St. Mary's GAA Club, Bobby joined them as a little kid, and it was the best thing that ever happened to him because he's a two-time minor medal winner with St. Mary's. Hopefully this year he'll be going for a third one. But I'd like to thank the managers, Ken, over the years, Ken, Alan, David, and Andy, because they've made him the man he is, that club.
Mm.
Because he goes to school now, he's a great, hardcore group of mates. Their parents, they've been brilliantly supportive of us.
Mm.
I can't speak highly enough of them.
He sounds like a remarkable person. He's a lot to contend
with. We're all proud of our children, Michael. Yeah. I've another son and two daughters, and Bobby's head and shoulders above him. He's a remarkable kid. And he's done it all himself, Michael. As I say, he's a young man. He's biceps on his biceps. He goes to the gym every day, but that doesn't tell the story.
And it's against the odds,
living
really,
in his mind.
Yeah. He's been sick all his life. He's had medical problems all his life. And that continues, as you say. You had hoped that it would have been treated by the time he reached 10 years of age. You had hoped that it would have concluded last May when he was 17. And now you're being told there's multiple surgeries ahead. And that will include this skin graft. What effect will that have? It doesn't sound...
This is what I'm saying to you, Michael.
Yeah.
And this is the part. This consultant that I've to see since last May, I want the answers. I want to know. I want to be able to tell Bobby. Like, to me, when I couldn't speak to Bobby, it's horrific. I think it frightens the life out of me when he told me, the surgeon, that he'd had the skin graft. It frightened me. When I told Bobby, like, what's in his mind, what's ahead of him, do you know what I mean? It was okay when he was a baby, when he was from 1 to 10, when he was getting these surgeries. We used to have it. I'd bring him down to the operating theatre. We'd have a bit of laugh and a joke because that's the way I'd be.
Yeah.
There's one particular joke he always told the nurses and doctors. He was a child then, but he's an adult now.
Yeah.
He's coming into a time where, he's going to be now going out socially. Like, even now, going out socially, even when he goes out socially, he cannot use the toilet. I'd have to go down and collect him, bring him home, bring him back down again. His sister Gerald did. As to God, she's like his carer, running around after him with the car, bringing him here, bringing him there, bringing him everywhere. She's brilliant. Brilliant. My other sons and daughter, Mark and Tracy, they're in Dublin. But we've had an unbelievable amount of support.
And you said earlier, I think, that you believe he shouldn't be in this position, that it's unnecessary, that it should have been sorted, solved.
Michael, the health service in this country, you know, people are talking about it. You're hearing from me. It's critical. It's in chaos. Administration levels, it's unbelievable. You know, we have a new Way Hope, the new hospital. It's a farce, as in billions spent on it, billions. It's going to be there for, you know, the children, and this is, they have to staff it. You know, it won't be able to be staffed. Yeah. That's the truth of it, as in to fill it.
Should the problems have been preempted? I mean, when that operation took place in May and they realised that it couldn't be completed, should they have known that beforehand? Should they have...
Oh, without a doubt, and this is what I'm saying to you. Like, the surgery that was performed, the tube of the urethra that they've been building for the last 17 years was to make this connection. But the lower part of his body, there should have been a scope into that. That should have been looked at, and that should have been treated as well. It was never. They were looking at the road that they were building for 16 years and never looking at the road that I had to join up to. You know, as I say to you in layman's terms, that's what it is.
As I listen to you, it sounds that you're past frustrated. Would I be right in thinking that when you're making contact, asking when... Bobby will get treatment, how he'll be treated and what's involved in that and what impact it will have on him, that when you're making those calls, it sounds to me as though you feel that you may as well be talking to the wind.
Michael, I said to you, and I'm not, when I rang, the last time I rang, what was said to me was, we'll leave a note for the doctor to get back to me. He hasn't got back to me since last May. I haven't spoken to that doctor since last May. I haven't spoken to anybody. They haven't rang me. I've had to make those calls every month since last May. And I get no answer. And I'm getting no answers. And
Do you know if it's possible to successfully treat Bobby at this stage?
Oh, I've no doubt. I've no doubt. And I've no doubt then when Bobby went in as a six-week-old child. And what it was explained to us that the surgery that was ahead of him, that there was an end product and there was going to be that he would have this connection and to build. But as I say, because of the health service and the chaos that's in it, the surgery that was to be done now, had it been done, he wouldn't have needed these operations. He wouldn't have needed the skin grafting. He wouldn't need the years ahead of him that he's to have ahead of him to face them.
Do you know how many years he has ahead of him? Does Bobby know how many years he has ahead of him?
Bobby, Michael, I can't speak to that consultant. I'm waiting. She's out on maternity leave. I just explained to you, she's out on maternity leave since last January. But yeah, that doctor that I spoke to, he performed a surgery with her in September. And if I look her up or Google it, as I did, she's a private clinic. So maybe there's surgery for private patients. There's another surgery for moisture. She doesn't like Bobby. That's wrong. That is wrong. That it can be done privately. Today, Michael and RD, I spoke to a young girl. Mother, our son, 3 years waiting on a tonsillitis operation. She borrowed €5,000 and got it done up in surgery. She drove her son up to Belfast. That surgery was 30 minutes it took to try for that operation. She was 3 years waiting. She had to borrow €5,000. And she got that surgery done in 30 minutes. 3 years.
And 17 years on, you reached this roadblock last May and this hugely important operation.
Life-changing.
Life-changing needs... to be done, but it's going to be at least a year, most likely much longer than that before Bobby is operated on.
I imagine, Michael, the way he has spoken to me, and my assumption of it, multiple surgeries, is that when we were told, when he was 6 weeks old, that there's going to be multiple surgeries, That was 17 years. So now the expectations that I have is that the multiple surgeries in front of him, are they going to take another 17 years? Given our health service as it is today, it's worse than it seems. You know, we've seen, it's horrific, Michael. And I'm not talking, I'm speaking about Bobby that needs life-changing surgery. But those are the children, you know. You know, we have ministers there. I'd love to walk them into Crumlin Hospital. Mm. I really, really would. I'd love to walk you into it, Michael. And you see children, and you may see a little child with a bandana around her head. Leukemia, cancer, being denied treatment, being denied medication. Look at a woman that went across the horn to get drugs for a child. Can't you? And I'll tell you a story, Michael, because you'll have written in that scrapbook. Mm. When I done what I done with my son, I took him off the machines. I knew it wasn't life-threatening as such. I took him off the machines and I brought him. Some years ago in Nina, there was a 7-year-old girl and she had complications like Bobby too, twisted. And she needed to get a bed in Crumlin too. But while she was waiting to bed in Nina, she had two collapses. And the day before, they eventually got her into Crumlin. And the night before her operation, she had a massive cardiac arrest and died, that child did. And here in this paper, I can quote it from you, when I done what I done, the HSE said to me, they wouldn't advise any father, it's in print there, Michael, they wouldn't advise any father to do what I done and take my son off. Those parents, had they done what I done, their child might possibly alive. At that, there was no bed for that child. And that's scandalous, Michael. Mm. And then you hear something like yesterday, this new minute, a rapturous applause. Unreal, Michael. It boils me blood. I am angry. Very, very angry. And there's a lot of parents like me with sick children. Denied surgeries, denied medication, denied health services, chronic. And we need a change. We have a new hospital being built. And it's going to be run by the same people that have been running. Michael, it needs to be run like a private enterprise. We have Layla, we have the Beacon. They're run for a profit. They're run by people that are in it for a profit. This new hospital, it's brilliant. It's cost us billions. It's ridiculous, the money, the people that made it. But it needs to be run by business people, not by the administration, not by a government. It needs to be run by business people. Bobby, I can tell you, for all those operations I just spoke to you about, those operating theatres start about 10 o'clock in the morning and finish at 4 o'clock. Office jobs, they need to be working around a shift.
And 7 days a week, I'm sure.
Seven days a week, Michael.
Jimmy, you've represented Bobby fearlessly since he was born, and today has been no different. Nice to see you, albeit under the ongoing life that you and your family have, which is a battle for services, which is a battle for what is only right.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you for giving me the opportunity.
Not at all. Thanks for coming into us this morning.
Thank you, Michael.
It's Jimmy Carroll, the father of Bobby.
Michael at lmfm.ie. The Michael Reid Show with Airgrid, managing and developing the national electricity grid so that it's fit for our current needs and ready for our future ones.
Jackie Taff was listening to that interview a few moments ago with Jimmy Carroll, telling us about a lifetime of treatment for his son Bobby that's going to continue for, well, some period of time with multiple operations still necessary. Jackie Taff has been texting, saying that interview was heartbreaking to listen to about Bobby. The despair, pain and hopelessness is palpable in Bobby's dad's voice. His heart is broken. The political establishment over the past 17 years should hang their heads in shame and be sent this recording. I hope someone in power is listening now and takes this family's hands and gets them the help they need to get through this in order that Bobby has some quality of life. They'll be in my thoughts and prayers, Jackie says. Thanks very much for that. Somebody else says, this is sad disgrace. Get well soon, Bobby. And the caller sends on regards to Jimmy and I'm sure the whole family. Somebody else said, and it's Olive who's texting saying, "Dear Michael, this is terrible what's going on with Bobby. Shame on our health service and on our government. Would it be possible to set up a GoFundMe page with LMFM and all of the listeners to send Bobby abroad for his treatment?" Thanks, Olive, for your message. Certainly would be happy to mention such a page if one was set up. Mag Y saying, "Michael, there's been multiple ministers for health over the past 30 years. It is not helpful to select one minister of health for criticism," says Mag Y. Paddy Duffy says, "After listening to Jimmy's story, that's a perfect example of the results of our two right-wing parties, Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil, and the two mudguard parties who back them up every time a government needs to be formed. Their philosophy is every man and woman for themselves. It's no way to run a society. So think hard about the way you vote next time you get the opportunity. You may need extra help yourself someday," says Paddy. Thank you for that. Some other issues that people have been commenting on. Margaret says it's getting harder to have sympathy for people who allow the murder and starvation of another country's children, women and men. 99% of them are innocent citizens. Some Israelis who have been interviewed don't seem to care about the slaughter that's going on in Gaza. People who expect the world to feel sorry for them while they allow this atrocity to continue is really too much to ask. And yes, I do condemn what Hamas did, but Netanyahu's response is total revenge on the innocent people in Gaza, and his aim is to wipe them out to save his own skin. Hitler the Second is living in Israel. He's as evil as Hamas, and both of them need to be brought to justice, as does any country who is arming Israel to allow this genocide to continue," says Margaret. Paddy in touch with us about the ongoing conflict, saying that the United States is not an honest broker when it comes to Palestine v. Israel. We'd another text then, WhatsApp message from Margaret, who says, "Michael, the Israelis are letting innocent Palestinian women and children die, blaming Hamas, which we all know are terrorists. But did all us Irish people suffer when we had the troubles in the north? We found peace, everlasting peace, respect for each other. If Israel let the food supplies through it and not let people starve, the world would see them in another light. There's always two sides to any story, and it's up to both sides now to make peace. It's such a wonderful way to live. It was evil what happened on October the 7th, innocent Israeli people and others killed, but now this looks like a one-sided war," she says. Thanks, as always, for your message, Margaret. Another text, Dan. From somebody who says, "I think the country needs a general election. We need a new party to run Ireland for us. Since Fine Gael got into power, homelessness rose by 10,000 with 4,000 children homeless. The price of houses has doubled, which is making it harder for my generation to buy a house. Myself and my wife are living in an apartment complex, which is affecting both our mental health, and we are finding it hard to even get a derelict house to renovate to buy for under €120,000. The government in power doesn't care about the younger generation and young families that want to make a basic life for themselves." Thanks very much for that. I think I can hear the frustration, if not the despair, in that. Another listener on WhatsApp saying, "Yes, there should be a general election." Somebody asking us earlier on if we would hold a straw poll on it, but we're just taking comments on it rather than trying to look on our calls as being a scientific reflection of what people generally are thinking. Theresa in phone with us, in touch with us on the phone about Leo Varadkar stepping down. She says the government was like a Gilbert and O'Sullivan operatic show. Leo led his regiment from behind. He was unaccountable and undetected. Nick has been in touch with us about the toll booth on the M1 motorway. He says driving from Dublin to Drogheda on the left-hand side, the toll isn't recognising your tag. He says it's been out of order for at least 7 months, and when you ask the girls in the toll office, they're aware of the issue, but they say that they're working to try and repair the problem. Can we find out something about it? Well, we'll endeavour to do that for you, Nick. Thanks for bringing it to our attention, and indeed for your call to the programme today. That has to be the final word on today's show. With thanks to Chris Murray in the control tower, I'm Michael. God willing, we'll see you for our next programme tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. right here on LMFM. Good morning. Bye-bye.
Listen back to the Michael Reid Show podcast on lmfm.ie or the LMFM app.
The Michael Reid Show with Airgrid, managing and developing the national electricity grid so that it's fit for our current needs and ready for our future ones.
The Michael Reid Show podcast. Tune in weekdays from 9 on LMFM. To contact us, email now, michael@lmfm.ie.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.